Supergirl Gab, the show where we watch Supergirl and then we talk about it. We are your hosts. I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And this week we're talking about 1984 Supergirl, the movie.
Not 1984's Supergirl, anything else. Specifically the movie.
And not 1984.
Not that either. Not the movie or the book, though I think that the book version of 1984's Supergirl that took place in the movie of 1984 was pretty interesting.
And we're also not talking about the Wonder Woman movie, even though I think, can we just say really quickly that, like, our two were thoughts that I really enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I've seen it three times.
I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't at least
There's definitely something to be said for the fact that, you know, with all the talk about how this was such a big deal, that it was the first Wonder Woman, you know, the first time that Wonder Woman has gotten to have her own movie. And this is Supergirl, I think, is also like a pretty historically important movie in superhero, you know, obviously of the modern age of superhero movies that we're in now. It's not in the same, not really in the same category, but there's still certainly a lot to be said for the fact that this was the first time, as far as I can think of, that a movie studio had tried to go like, all right, we are going to do a female superhero. And odd that they picked Supergirl instead of Wonder Woman, but I guess they wanted to go with that connection to the Superman movies.
I want to say there must have been comic book heroines that weren't technically superheroines that must have gotten movies before this, but I don't know off the top of my head. But as far as I know, this was specifically the, like, in terms of big Hollywood action move, like superheroine movie, this was pretty much the big one. It was also for better or for worse, it was also, well, not for better, but whether or not it was deserved, it was also the movie that a lot of people pointed to as, well, you can't make a superheroine movie, look what happened with this. And I think we'll both discuss again why maybe that wasn't completely fair, and but also where the movie kind of falters. And
well, look, this movie has problems and flaws and all that kind of stuff, but I love this movie. I think this movie is great in its own ways, and the things that are good about this movie, I think, far outweigh the things that are not so great about it. And this movie has like a charm and I started to say a purity of heart, but I don't know if that's exactly the right choice of words, but there's something super about this movie. I think there's a lot of something supers, some super things about this movie.
So I guess we should, because you and I come from very different points of view from this movie, and I think maybe we should start there. Chris, I'll let you speak later about your history, because you had talked to me about this before while we were planning this. But you are obviously a very big fan of this movie.
Which I didn't really realize until watching it again to do this. Part of me was like, you know, I wanted the excuse to watch it. I was like, because this would be a good thing to watch, and with Wonder Woman coming out. But I was also like, this is going to be hard to sit through. But I think that this time watching it, there was a reason for a pretty big change. Maybe not a big change, but there was definitely like, let me ask you this just real quick, because I think this is very important. And this is definitely going to be very important to the listeners if they decide after hearing us talk about it that then they want to go watch Supergirl. I need to know how you watched this movie.
Behind the scenes stuff that it's actually been a couple weeks since I saw it, because we were supposed to record this a couple weeks ago, and listeners, we really tried, but
there was a combination of things going on.
Yeah, there was some technical difficulties, and then we couldn't get our schedules match up. So it took us a little deeper into June than we wanted to.
We did not think there was going to be
I'm trying to remember. I believe it was through Amazon. So like we rented it on Amazon.
Okay.
But I will say so you have a pretty close connection to this movie. I saw this movie originally. The best I can remember is I must have been around 10, maybe even like between 8, 9 or 10. And it was, I turned it on in the middle of like a Sunday or Saturday afternoon. And it was around the time, and we'll get to this part of the movie, with the construction worker in a daze walking around the town, and then the bulldozer coming after him, and then Lucy trying to save him, and then Supergirl coming. So for a few minutes, like at least a good 10-15 minute window, I had no idea this was a movie about Supergirl. And then I kept watching it because I knew at least about like Clark Kent. I knew about Superman. So I kept watching it. And even as a child, I was thinking, this is odd. This is a very odd tone. And I think it was, I believe this watch through this year is the first time I saw it actually from like start to finish. But yeah, so I had a very random happenstance discovery of this film as a child.
Well, the reason why I asked how you watched it was because this movie has got to be like one of the most infamous incidents in, you know, superhero movie history, of a movie of where there are so many different versions of it that people have seen throughout the years. And a big part of, I think, people's opinions on how good it is or isn't is based on which version of the movie they saw. Because so the original version of this movie that the director put together, or the director and the studio, whoever put together, and obviously we'll get into all of our thoughts and feelings and such on it in a second, but I think this is like important back sort of like helps explain sort of some of the backstory on this movie in popular culture and just people's response to it. So after Superman 3 came out in 1983, Warner Brothers was already working on, and the Salkins, who produced all the Superman movies, they were already working on Supergirl, and they wanted to have it like be a direct, like, you know, we're going to start a whole nother franchise along with the Superman movies and do Supergirl. And after Superman 3 didn't do quite as well as they wanted, Warner Brothers was like, we don't want to make this movie anymore. But it was like already basically done. So they just were like, you know what? We don't want to put it out. And then they let another studio come in and, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a movie term for when they put it out, but I can't think of what it is. Yeah, this is going to drive me crazy.
You'll think of it in the middle of the conversation.
Yeah. When it wouldn't make any sense to go back and just say what it was. Anyway, so a different studio ended up putting it out. And then they had the rights to it for a long time. And like, it was the only Superman related thing that Warner Brothers didn't have the rights to for years and years and years and years. Anyway, the movie first came out overseas in a version that was 124 minutes long. And so if you watch this, I'll say to anyone, the movie is readily available on Amazon to rent for $2.99. And the international cut, which is 124 minutes, is what you'll see on there. So that's what we both watched, was the international version.
Okay, good. I was very worried that we were going to have a conversation where
that wasn't going to make sense.
The whole time, I wasn't sure if we just watched a different version from each other,
or right. if I was very it,
because
worried about
it's
this.
Been like 2 weeks, if I just completely forgot about like a random plot point.
Yeah, I was worried about like, because I watched it on the copy of the DVD that I have is the one that Warner Brothers put out in 2006 when they had finally gotten the rights back to it, and it's the international cut. But the problem was is when this movie came out in theaters, everywhere else in the world got it at this 124-minute version. And by the time
how long is the one that the U.S. got?
The one that the U.S. got is 20 minutes shorter.
Okay.
And it's all just stuff that like makes the movie make more sense gets cut out. Okay. Or scenes where you're like, oh, this really kind of lets me know a little bit more about this person's character or whatever. So the theatrical version we got in America was 105 minutes. The original version of this movie that the director and the studio put together was 150 minutes. And then they cut that down to 124 for the international. And I know this is like way more sort of backstory
well,
than we would normally do.
It will also make me feel a little gentler about some of my complaints about this movie.
Right.
Gentle, constructive criticism of this over 30-year-old movie. Because I can recognize the fact that there is a version out there that would probably explain more and but we'll get into that.
Yeah. And so then when they put it out on video, the version that a lot of people saw then in video was 89 minutes long, which cuts out so much more of the movie. And then the version that they put on TV that a lot of people also probably saw back in the, you know, like the 80s and 90s was only 92 minutes long. So that's like huge chunks of this movie were taken out. The movie did very poorly theatrically. So a lot of people never even saw the theatrical version. They were seeing versions that were even shorter. So when I see so many, you know, like looking at it on Amazon and on IMDb and stuff, I saw a lot of people talking about like, how this movie is bad and it doesn't make sense and all this stuff. And I realized, oh man, over the years, like so much of people talking about how much they don't like this movie or how dumb it is or how bad they think it is because the versions they've seen of it have huge chunks of the plot taken out. Which is just like, wow, why would you make this movie that has already got problems even harder for people to like?
And so with this, though, when I have questions about the plot and I question, even if they're just more of me not expecting an answer, you'll be able to tell me if something from the international version actually explains it.
Well, hopefully. Because
goodness we'll knows, see. Goodness knows I have some questions.
I think that there was, I think that there's definitely this movie. No matter how long a cut you watch, I think there are still things that the script had problems with that it's just like, there's going to be some questions that will not be able to be answered. But, and that's kind of what I was...
Should we start? I mean, okay, so I will say this for the movie. I actually have some good, either things that I think that it does well, or things that I could totally see the potential of the idea and that wasn't executed well. And I will say, the first thing I will say in its defense is that it's not that much weirder than the first Superman movie, which I first watched last year. So I have like no nostalgia for the first Superman movie.
The first Superman movie is in my top three of all-time movies, so I have lot of nostalgia for it.
Me, I literally watched it because I was going to be on, I was on a panel about Lois Lane, and I was like, oh, I should probably watch that original movie just so that I have a sense of what that character was like for so many people from that watch, where that's their quintessential Lois. Right. But I was watching it like, this is a strange movie. I mean, I know that like superheroes are naturally quite straight, like the concept is strange, but this is like some really weird Silver Age inspired stuff.
Totally.
So, which is again,
they never tried anything like that, you know? I mean, it was like honestly, they were like,
so they go to the source, and the source was really weird.
Yeah, it's like they're just going, we have no idea. No one's ever tried to do a man, and I have watched so many behind the scenes documentaries on the making of the original Superman movie. And when you see some of the, like, how much weirder it could have been, or like how much, like how completely wrong it could have gone, that movie is like an absolute miracle that it is, you know, that it is such, that it is as super as it is. I'm going to say super so many times as an adjective this week. Oh my gosh.
But Katie,
I just want to say, I'm sorry I keep cutting you off. I've got like so much excited energy. This is probably the most excited I have been to talk about something we have watched.
So I'm really hoping, again, it's not that I disliked it. I have some positive things to say about it, but I'm also way more in, like, I don't have quite that level of elation that you have. So hopefully I don't bring down the room.
We've had weeks where you were trying to pick me up for when I was not feeling it. It's all balance.
It's your turn now. again, I'm like, whatever. But with Superman, the movie, and comparing the two now within about a year or so of watching one and now rewatching Supergirl, there's, again, the tone's pretty close in terms of like weird magicking away stuff, plot points that kind of, I mean, there's a lot there that I can completely see how it's in line with the Superman movie that, you know, from how I saw with no nostalgia goggles on. Now, the execution of some of those ideas are where they falter. And obviously, like, the editing is a major issue, as we've just discussed with our little history lesson.
Dalliance into being Wikipedia.
Yeah. But as much as people, you know, call out the movie for being like disjointed in terms of ideas and wackiness and goofiness, like it's actually pulling from what was already a very successful property.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just off the bat, like, that was something that I think it's unfairly, I think, criticized for. But
of this movie fits in perfectly with the established sort of Superman cinematic universe.
Oh, yeah.
That the 80s had put together. Like, it feels perfectly at home in that. But then I will say there is some stuff in this movie I would love to know how this decision got made.
So should we start with the beginning of the movie?
Let's start with these amazing opening credits. I said this on Twitter, but it's like... I have so much to say about this movie. I feel like our episode is like not going to be enough, where I was like, I feel like I need to just record like an entire feature length commentary track for the movie.
Maybe that can be like a winter, when we have a winter break.
Okay.
That way it will give us some time to like, I actually like this idea a lot now. Like we can do a commentary on the movie. We can record that, but we'll do it like in 6 months when our brains have kind of had time to disperse our conversation now.
Right.
And
right.
That should give us just enough time. And then you can like point out every single thing you like, and I'll be like, yeah, that certainly was a scene. I'll be nicer than that, I promise.
Those opening credits looked like they were trying to do, they wanted to do something like Superman opening credits, but they didn't want to do the same thing as Superman because that was too expensive. But even so, supposedly those opening credits cost $1 million to do. And I cannot explain how that is possible in any universe.
I'm reminded of, I haven't actually seen the movie, but I've seen like people point out things about it. But I think, was it Superman 3 that had the names like flying behind the Earth? As if they were hiding.
I don't remember that, but now I'm very curious to go back and see.
I think it might have been, it was the one, I think, where he gets rid of all the nuclear missiles.
That's Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. 4,
okay. I believe Superman 4, if I'm recalling right, because someone made a joke about it, was the fact that no one wanted to be in this movie, so they're all hiding behind.
That was the absolute cheapest Superman movie they have made.
Oh, I will believe that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, that's another one that, oh, goodness, I could talk about for forever, but I won't.
But yeah, it is one of those things where, like, you, if they had had less focus on making and trying to make the effects of the opening credit, maybe some things later on in the actual movie could have had a little boost.
Yeah. You could have maybe not seen the wires holding her up in, while she's flying quite so often. Maybe not seen her cape running into the wires quite so often.
A little bit. Yeah. A little extra. A few extra supplies.
Way less care put into the flying than in the Christopher Reeve
movies.
Oh,
we will get to that because I have some questions in that. I really
hope I'm able to answer all of your questions.
I know.
Like,
I hope too.
I have some kind of answer.
So we see Kara's. It is in Kandor, is it?
No, it's not in Kandor. It's Argo City.
Argo City. Right. Which is actually fairly canonical with.
Yeah.
Which is not, like, again, a lot of this weirdness they actually pulled from, like, the actual comics, so people should be blaming the comics. But then we see Kara's mentor, played by Peter O'Toole, who is way too good for this movie.
The crazy thing is, like, there's so many, like, for real actors in this movie, and they're all just, like, acting their asses off one way or the other.
I'm like, Peter, I mean, granted, I think he looks like he's at least having fun with it. I don't want to assume that he was actually enjoying himself because he could just be a very good actor. But, like, there's a warmth to him. There's a cleverness. He kind of has a David Bowie-esque from Labyrinth kind of slyness, but less,
yeah,
like, less baby stealing.
He seems nice, but there's also like a little bit, there is that like little
bit of
like creepy.
It's kind of Gandalf-y almost too.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
yeah, totally.
He's a good guy, so you could probably trust him, but also he's probably going to do something reckless. And
yeah, he seems like he has a drinking problem,
even before, from
space.
Before he canonically has
a drinking problem.
Yeah. So we meet him and we never quite understand. I mean, they explain a lot. They explain a lot in a very short amount of time because there's so much exposition in these first few minutes of him explaining to Kara, who should know this, we are in inner space. They are in outer space. That's why there are Kryptonians here, in about their world and about the power source, which again, Kara should all know already.
She seems so young in this opening. And then it's like when Superman came to Earth in the first Superman movie, you see him from being an infant to being like a toddler by the time he makes it to Earth. But Peter O'Toole, or Zaltar, as he's called in this, at some point he says that, or maybe it's Supergirl's dad says something like, they basically only have about like a couple days, you know, like 2 days or something to get the Omega Hedron back. They keep calling it the Omega Hedron also, which really irritated me. I just feel like it should be like a hard E on Omega Hedron. I could be totally wrong, but it sounds right, more right to me that way.
I'll let you have that. I have no idea.
She seems so much older by the time she gets to Earth. She seems like a little kid in those opening scenes. And then once she gets to Earth, she seems like at least a late teenager.
Well, and we'll get into this later too, because again,
her age is very confusing in this.
It is there, and I'm going to try to go in order mostly, just because I feel like I'm going to lose like details that I'm going to completely forget bring up because there's so much. But there are also like weird parts where there are weird parts where they have her acting on Earth as, like, way too innocent. Like, when she's putting on the bra in on top of her clothes. And I'm right. like, you are the worst person faking being an Earthling I've ever seen. And that's yeah. pretty bad. Like, I've seen some bad fish out of water alien stories. This is pretty sad. Or the part where she's like,
it's so
she's
up and down.
Yeah, she's kissing the mirror, and I'm just like, oh no, don't do that.
Well, there's also a lot of stuff in this that really reeks of this was written by a middle-aged man,
yeah.
who has no idea what teenage girls do when they're alone.
And if there was a lot of company interference too, I get why there might be some weird. And then what was edited out and, right. you know, and what was chosen to keep in, and girls love romance. So, like, we better have her be, like, interested in boys and thinking about yeah. kissing.
Well, it's like when she's flying around and stuff, and it's like she flies around and looks at horses, you know,
yeah.
and she's like, not just
for
like
a
flying
long
around.
Time.
Yeah. It's just like, look, here I am with some horses for a very long time. Or it's yeah. like. And I get it. I mean, obviously, this movie, they wanted to try to go like, all right, we're going to make a superhero action movie like the Superman movies, which we hope the people that like the Superman movies, because they have been huge, will come to see. But the audience who's not quite as interested in those movies is probably like, you know, young girls. So it's like, it's kind of, you have to go like, well, this is like, at least they're making an effort to try to make something, even if they're going about it the wrong way in a lot of places, you know, they're trying to go like, oh, let's try to make a movie that little girls will also want to come see.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of, Kara makes a magical butterfly out of this power source that no one is freaking out is out in the open until like something bad happens to it, which drives me like, I'm like, why is this so casual? Why is it? And then he never explains why he took it out besides like he felt like it. It was very strange. And then Kara deciding she needed to draw a butterfly or dragonfly, I think.
That thing scared me to death as a kid.
That makes like, sense. I can see that happening.
Terrifying to me. I know it's supposed to be like beautiful and fun, but like after I was like, it creeped me out to begin with. And then as soon as it nearly causes the destruction of their world, I'm like,
yeah.
Those things are
terrifying.
That's
a danger. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Kara and me, like, everybody's yelling at Peter O'Toole. Right. He's like, oh, what did you expect from me? I'm the wacky person. Like, I have great ideas until I have terrible ones, is basically yeah. his excuse.
It's like he's one of those people who is like, he's a genius. But he's like, he's such a genius, he's bored by everything. So then he just starts going like, well, I know taking the Omegahedron and doing stuff with it is a terrible idea, but I'm bored. And we're stuck in this like little yeah. inner space world. So this is...
Also, Mia Farrow's in this for like a
right?
half second. And then I'm like, they must have given her a bigger role because like, why would you cast her? Unless she really, really wanted to be in Supergirl, which, I mean, maybe she's a huge comic fan. I don't want to presume. But this feels like something where you would, I mean, she had already done at least Rosemary's Baby by this point.
Yeah.
If not, like, it's not been, like, a established actor beyond that.
Maybe
so,
for them, this was like having Marlon Brando be, you know, in the opening of Superman. They were like,
I bet. But he
get,
was
like, a big
like,
star for one of the parents.
That must have been it, but like with Marlon Brando, they still had him like come back for the big speech in the middle. He had
yeah.
like oomph. It really makes you wonder what they were thinking, because when I saw her in the cast, I was like, who the heck does Mia Farrow play? Like, oh, someone on Earth maybe? Or like,
yeah.
no, like one scene and barely touches on anything, which I mean, shout out to the Supergirl show for making Kara's mom like way more interesting.
Now, I have no idea. I have nothing to substantiate this, but just as we were talking about it, I feel like I've come up with like 1980s movie executive idea for like why this happened. Where it's like they go, we can't have, we want someone famous to be one of her parents. We want to get like a big star like we did with Marlon Brando for the Superman movies. So, all right, so we get Mia Farrow to be the mom. And you go like, well, you could just as easily have everything that happens with Zoltar. You could have just had her mom be that character.
Yeah.
But then they're like,
or have another like female role model that she could play.
Well,
but,
well, I'm saying like to better use Mia Farrow.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They could have just had her mom be that character where it's like she's the one who's the genius. But then that would actually be
like, they'd actually have like a woman in a role of.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, but then they were like, oh, then it's too many women in this. We need that mentor role to be a man, or men aren't. I mean, like, this is dumb 1980s executive thinking.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
So then you just got Mia Farrow in it for, you know, for 2 minutes and one scene, and you don't even see her again at the end. Spoilers, sorry. You don't see her again at the end.
Yeah. So Kara jumps through, and then Kara's dad is like, you just basically screwed us all over. Well, now I'm going to the Phantom Zone. Like, we didn't even bring that up, so
yeah, no one mentioned the Phantom Zone. You just really want to go to the Phantom Zone.
Suddenly, like, are you self-sabotaging your entire rest of your life? Because, like, that would explain why you just, like, stole your precious power source. Well, I just doomed us all. I guess I have to go to eternal torture now.
Well, and the part
goodbye
where he,
forever.
The way he, like, sits it down when her mom isn't looking and then, like, sort of kicks it over to by where Kara is, instead of just putting it back in his pocket, it's like, why? What? Why? You're exactly right. It's like he has this just like ridiculous self-sabotaging attitude where he's just like, yeah, I know this is going to cause all kinds of badness, but I hate myself and I hate being stuck here. I'd rather be I've got to make something happen.
Yeah. It's none of this for such a big plot point, because that the stupid glowing orb thing is like the plot point of the, you know. It's
the magic MacGuffin of the movie.
It is the magic MacGuffin of the movie. They never really explain. There's so much to the scene that feels like it needed a second or third pass over just to make it make sense.
Right, right.
So it doesn't feel like it would have been that hard to come up with something other than I just felt like it. Now I'm handing it off to this child, you know? Yeah. So, Peter O'Toole is still delightful in the scene. It just makes no sense. So Kara flies out, and while she's en route, the orb falls into the hands of an actual witch, which is very convenient for the witch that she just happens to be the one. and that is the witch Selena, played
by the radiant and wonderful super villainy.
Yes.
Faye Dunaway, who is just, man, another amazing actress or actor, you know, like who's in this and is like, how are all of you people in this movie? And it's like, so strange. And
yeah, it's worth noting too right now, and I had mentioned this to you last week, that it is super convenient and timely that we are doing this episode now, because tomorrow in the Supergirl, like the main Supergirl comic, Selena is showing up. She is going canon. Yeah, I totally told you this like a few days ago.
I have no memory of that. But to be fair, though,
you can look into your direct messages.
Yeah, I'll go look it back up. But
I was wondering why you weren't super happy. Like you didn't
I may have had like a response to it at the time, but like also, the fact that I don't remember it now is like over the last several days I have been on a ton of cold medicine. So like I've been
so
like
surprised. She.
Oh, I'm so excited to go to the comic store tomorrow now.
Yeah, so it's the one where Supergirl and Batgirl have been sucked into the Phantom Zone, and who is there? But
Selena. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, I was super pumped. And I actually, because I've chatted with Steve Orlando, the writer, before, and I told him, hey, just so you know, we are totally
name dropper over here.
No, I have a reason for this. I have a reason for bringing this story up. But I told him, like, hey, so we are, Chris and I are totally doing a podcast episode, like, this upcoming week about the Supergirl, you know, 1984 movie. So thanks for, like, super...
Yeah, for timing it so perfectly.
Yeah. I was like, that was, like, really good timing on your part. So thanks for that. Great tie-in. So yeah, I'm super pumped to see that. And the fact that, like, Batgirl's, like, my favorite ever. So this is going to be a really fun issue.
Oh, man,
and
yeah.
I'm also just, like, super excited because, as we're about to talk about, Faye Dunaway, as you said, is great in this. In terms of just, like, menacing, like, oh my god, the chewing of the scenery in
yes,
this
exactly.
movie. It's
she
so...
and like she and Brenda Vaccaro together are like they're both
really
like clearly
good.
They're
yeah.
so great together. They have like such a rapport, and you can tell that's because clearly they are two like actual actresses who have been around, and it's like they've been around long enough to be like they know sort of what they're in, you know, and they're just like, let's just have a good time with this. And like all of their stuff with like Peter Cook and who is also, I was like, this is all just, this cast is insane. And it's also like when you look like on, I've saved like all these pictures, you know, like different posters. I've been on quite a Supergirl tear here on the last, in the last couple days since like, you know, having the movie in my mind and like rewatching it and thinking about all this stuff. And you look at like one of the posters has that thing that they used to do in movie posters where they would have like, you know, the big main image, but then down at the bottom, they've got the little boxes with all the people's faces in them.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, also in this movie, Faye Dunaway, you know, Hart Bochner, you know, who, all the different people. And you just look at that cast of people and you go like, wow, none of these people would get cast in a movie like this now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like Helen Slater is like a beautiful young lady. And I think she makes a great Supergirl. Like it's, I think it was great casting her, but like, she does not look like a person who they would cast for Supergirl now, which they did, you know, they cast, Melissa Benoist. We still have no confirmed pronunciation.
Think that's how I know I've heard her say it before. And now, and I'm pretty sure you got close.
okay.
But yeah, I think you're right. There is like, there's something very 1980s.
There's something like old.
1970s too. Like 1970s to 1980s movies.
This movie feels like almost more like it was made in the 70s than the 80s.
Yeah, it does. Except for like some of those fashion choices. That is where it goes. But yeah, so Selena, even at the beginning of this movie, it's not that like she's a woman who then gets powers from this orb and then like, and then decides to be an evil witch. She's already evil witch. She's just not that good at it.
Yeah, she's already a terrible, but she already wants to take over the world. She just
she's
has
so ambitious.
No faculties
yeah.
to do it.
Yeah, and she's kind of like, she's been kind of holding on to just like, to this professor who is also a witch. And I was like, wait, it can't be that the professor, it's just the professor looks like the guy who the villainess was seeing.
you thought it was two guys at first?
Yeah, because it makes no, how, what a weird coincidence. There's so many weird coincidences from the orb, like dropping at her feet to it just so happens that this like this evil witch warlock guy also teaches at like the all girls school.
Yeah, they were originally going to call this movie Amazing Coincidences, the movie.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what? Did they just not have enough to cast like that one guy? Like, there was that one scene with him, and they're just like, let's just bring in the other. Let's bring in the boyfriend.
We're liking this guy. Let's just have him also be the teacher.
Yeah. So he's kind of condescending to Selena. And I am actually, yeah, I'm pr- pretty in Selena's corner for this first scene, because as soon as she gets that little extra boost of power, she totally leaves him in the dust, and seems rightfully so, because he seems like kind of a jerk. And she doesn't
I still like Selena, like, at the end of the movie. Like, she's like,
I have less problems with, like, not necessarily even her motivations, just her choices. Which we will get to, because I have some quotes from her that make that make me go, really?
Yeah. She has especially like with this, like we said, the scenes, like all the parts with like her and Brenda Vaccaro, there's just so many scenes where you're like, that is a line I will probably never be able to forget now.
Yeah. And I want to get back to Selena, but I do want to shout out to Brenda Vaccaro, who was apparently Johnny Bravo's mother in the Johnny Bravo cartoon, which is amazing to me. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Cause it's her, like that voice is like right there.
Yeah.
She also, played, I think, Joey Tribbiani's mother on Friends at one point. I'm scrolling that through IMDb.
That totally makes sense.
I'm looking to see if there was anything else that like really stood out. Oh, recently she was in Kubo and the Two Strings. So that's like good for her. But yeah, she was one of those, the characters that I really noted. Like, I really like this character. She gets to have a lot of really funny moments. Like, she gets to have a lot of little snappy lines. She and Faye Dunaway have a lot of chemistry.
Yeah.
It's a really fun dynamic between those two.
She is almost like how you wish, how you want to. She is like so kind of quippy and nonplussed by everything, or just like, huh, well, look at that. It's almost like she's like the kind of person you wish you could be under in crazy circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, where you go like.
She's a much needed person that's pointing out when something's like particularly ridiculous. Even as she's part of the ridiculousness. But she's kind of the voice of reason in a movie that has very little reason.
Yeah.
And I will say, one of the biggest things that I had, that I said, to myself as I was watching this all the way through, is that one of the smartest things that they did, and I think something that was, could have been really key if to making this like a stronger movie, was, but just like the fact, something that they got right basically is giving Kara a magic based villain.
And I absolutely know, like, 100% agree with you.
We've talked about it before that with the Superman or the Super Family, you know, there are certain things,
the Super Fam.
The Super Fam, or the Supes Fam, if you really want to get, if you really want to tighten up that, the Supes Fam, is there are only so many things that like super weaken them. I mean, obviously, like if they're going up against someone massive like Darkseid, that's going to be challenging.
Problematic. Yeah.
Problematic. or, you know, like, yeah, like the big bads, obviously. And then Kryptonite, which is overuse. I mean, it is. Especially in the movies, because they decide every movie needs to be epic. And what's more epic than Kryptonite? Well, it's not so epic when you use it every single one. But magic,
I was very glad that there was no Kryptonite in this.
Yeah. I mean, they completely stayed away from it, which is good. Then we have magic, and you know, it's an interesting way to pull in different parts of the DC universe. And sometimes obviously didn't happen in this one,
but it could have.
Yeah. There are a lot of different ways you can go about it. And it's something that the characters are legitimately weak against, and it sort of makes sense. Like, at least makes sense in a better way than her being, you know, restrained in different ways.
Right.
Because that could have been something that could have happened where she goes against a foe that just is super strong, and everybody's wondering why why Superman could have faced someone like that, but not her, you know?
Well, that was the big thing to me was like watching this, I was going like, man, why didn't they have Superman fighting some monsters? Why don't they have Superman fight something, you know, if you could do this with one of, I mean, I guess the other Superman movie they made after that was then the fourth one, which was, it's got its all its own problems. Yeah. And they were not going to be like, oh yeah, let's do some big fancy, you know, figure out how to do some monster special effects and all this stuff. They were like, let's make this thing as cheap and easy as possible. Well, I mean, I guess Superman 4 technically does have a monster. It's just a monster where his monstrous feature is that his fingernails are very long.
Yes.
I was just going like, man, this would be so cool that like this works so well. You totally get what's going on. And it's not just having the, you know, your super character fight someone who is basically just like them.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're not using kryptonite. You're not, you know, it's like, oh, here's invisible monsters, which of course, like invisible monster is like the lamest.
We'll get to that. We'll actually get to that. Because someone did point out when we asked for questions, which we'll get to at the end of the episode, but on Twitter, someone pointed out that the chances that happened because they just ran out of money to actually like put a special effect monster,
right?
Like some kind of dragon or something into that scene. And I'm like, oh, that does make more sense.
But I think that it like, it's also kind of neat, like to where they go like, all right, now we have to do some practical effects to make it look like something is coming through here. And you at least get some neat visuals, you know, where it's like, it's not just the same thing that you normally see of like, it would be better if they had had the time and money or whatever to make that monster the part. Well, we'll get to it when we get to it, I guess.
We'll get to it. I have more criticism of that scene, I think, than you do, but that's okay. So we haven't even, all right. So Supergirl gets there. Not before there's a radio announcement talking about how Superman has indeed left Earth because he has to go on a peace mission to space, which is super convenient.
Well, it's also like you're kind of burying the lead here that it's like, oh, yeah, apparently this galactic peace thing he has to go try to do is like, oh, so we're definitely no one's like completely flipping out that it's like, yes, there are tons of other civilizations out there or something. It's like this is still the 80s and they're like people. I just can't imagine like if tomorrow we found out that like, yes, there are tons of other alien civilizations and they've shown up and we're being invited to go to this big galactic peace thing with them or to send our important guy off. Well, I'm saying we don't have a Superman in this world, so it would have to be some
other, you know,
some kind of other very important person. And I only said guy because in that movie it's Superman.
I got it. We got so much more to cover. We got to get past this. I know what you mean. It seems like
people would not just still be going to Popeyes and acting like, oh, okay, well, let's get to class. It would be like
another part. There's a definitely part down the line that we will talk about where people are being a little too calm about certain
I know exactly
events.
What you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, we will get to it because I have full notes and questions. So Supergirl flies out of the lake full in her costume, and it's never explained.
Yeah.
Ever explained. Look, again, the Superman movie.
I've also wondered how they did. I've wondered how they did that, like almost my entire life. How they did that scene of her flying out of the water. Yes, I just found out last night, and I was like, "Oh, that's so brutal!" Because she comes out of the water, and it's like she's not even wet. No, it's not backwards because that wouldn't look. Because it's you just go like. And I sat there and like rewatched the scene a bunch of times, like slow, trying to figure out how, cause she clearly just shoots up out of the water, but she's not wet. Like nothing is like out of place. And I was like, how is this possible? And now I'm like, maybe I shouldn't tell people. Maybe I should just let people see.
I will let you decide.
Well, Yeah, guys, dear listeners, you can just go watch the part and see if you can figure it out. And then email us if you think you've figured out how they did it without cheating and just looking up how they did it.
So, all right. So then she starts flying. We talked about this part earlier where she seems to get lost in her new powers, which in for an idea is okay if it was shorter and not really long. And also not have a really whimsical, like, background song. Because there's a lot of whimsy and a lot of her, like, very casually flying. Instead of, like, I don't know. I know that there's a way that they could have done this that was shorter and just her, like, in the moment, just being, like, overwhelmed by this new thing she can do. That's fine. I could have handled that. But it goes on for so long. She flies over waterfalls, and as you said, horses. I mean, it's such a strange choice, and there's never even a point where she really snaps back and clearly is ready to go find what she needs to find.
Well, she is so, like, they sort of set this up like she's got some kind of plan, but it's like she gets there and has no idea where she is, what's going on. All she's got is her, you know, her like Kryptonian Fitbit and that lights up sometimes,
yeah.
But it's not like there's never any explanation of like, it's giving her directions or, giving her any kind of explanation as to like what's going on or like any kind of proximity alert. You kind of get eventually that seems like there's like, oh, it's close enough that like something, there's some kind of reaction happening. But it's just like she shows up and has no idea where she is. And it's like, yeah, I can fly around. But like the fact that then she ends up going to the place where it is also like, oh, I guess coincidentally she happened. It happened to land in a place where, thankfully, Lois Lane's sister is also to help her, acclimate.
Well, again,
which we'll get to, but yeah.
Thinking about it, because we talked about how they could have made the opening with Argo City better, and I wonder if it would have been better if her mentor got arrested and she went to see him and then he basically like gave her the bracelet and said like,
this, you know, will help you find it.
Yeah. Anything like you need to go, you need to be the one to do or something or anything. Even like,
just give us anything.
Yeah. Anything. Or maybe, like he says to like the council or whatever, like whatever they have there. I have this thing and we need to just send someone out to get it. And they were like, oh, it's too dangerous. And this is the worst idea. And then Kara takes it, which at least would make her a little proactive and still have the kind of jump into dangerness, yeah, that the movie actually had. But something to like, to at least indicate that it doesn't come out of just F nowhere.
There's also like no explanation of how that egg that she takes, you know, how that like
how that
somehow
works.
Yeah, how it gets her to
the binary
Earth.
Transport. I wrote that phrasing down.
Oh Lord. I love that like there's all these like terms that they tried to like put in where to like
there's
make
so
stuff
much
sound.
Exposition. And it's like, but it's never the exposition that actually explains the plot.
Well, and but they do like, they keep saying things like that, like, oh, the binary transfer, the quantum turbulence, the six-dimensional geometry. Like it's just like that thing, she answers that question in class and then Lucy is like, how'd you know that? And she's like, well, I don't know, a six-dimensional geometry or whatever. And it's like, it's just a math question. You don't, it's like, just get a calculator. You can figure it out.
I think that ties into like an earlier part where she's talking her mentor.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, okay, that's an okay callback. But it's also weird. Like, I don't know. That one frustrated me because she talks about how she has trouble remembering
The equations.
I know the equation. I remember that line take because I was like, oh, they should have done another line take. It's a little off. But then later when she remembers it, it would have been nice if it was, or maybe she does. And like I said, it's been a couple weeks since I got to see it, but maybe having more of a, I don't know. There could have been a way for right after her saying that she doesn't remember the equations and now she does. is a little weird.
Or just have her be really smart.
Yeah,
have or her be have really her be smart like, and capable.
Actually, that would have been way more. This actually now is frustrating me because what if going back to that first scene, which I feel like we're determined to fix, having Kara be very like numbers smart, but her mentor knowing that her thinking outside the box and being creative will actually, you know, help her grow into an even more brilliant person. And so use this tool of ours. Isn't it super dangerous? Draw a butterfly. So,
yeah. Or like then, you have her, you know, where she's like, she's so about her smarts and books and stuff and like her equations and all that stuff. And he's like, yeah, but you can do so much more. I have so much more faith in you. You've got to be like a little more, you know, you've got to stop playing it so safe, you know? And so then she takes that to heart and is like, all right, I'm going to take this opportunity to go to Earth and save the day. And it's what brings her out. Or you just have her be like, yeah, math on Krypton is like way fancier, or, you know, is way more advanced. So you have her in that class. And even though it's supposed to be like a computer class where it's a computer mathematics class in 1984, if you can even imagine such a thing,
so,
where he's like,
so
I'm going
chads.
To, yeah. Like where he's just like, oh, if you're lucky, I'll share these equations that will unlock the simple math formulas. You know, and then you just have her go like, be just completely bored with it. Like, this is so easy. Like, this is baby stuff to me. Anyway.
Yeah.
They need to send us back in time to fix this movie.
Yes, obviously. No, because again, you don't watch The Flash. You don't realize how bad that can be. Because every time.
Yeah.
Every time. Oh, wait, no. You know what Flashpoint's about. It's fine. So she's flying. And then apparently Midvale is just a little bit below Chicago for some reason. They never explain it. I mean, it's not even that big of a deal. It's just, again, weird, as you say, that Lois Lane's sister just happens to be in this like podunk little town in below Chicago,
and Jimmy just happens to also be showing up coincidentally this week that this is all happening.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Like, why wouldn't she show up?
Why does she have to even bother going to school? Like, why doesn't she just like nonstop try to find the thing?
And like that's her choice. It makes no earthly sense.
Well, yeah, she's so worried about getting this thing back in a hurry, and then she's like, yeah, okay, I'll take time to like go register for classes and play field hockey.
Oh, look at these girls, they're all like, oh, and then I'll just switch clothes for no reason, and like,
which is a power I have apparently.
Yeah, and I can also change my hair at any point.
The clothes is fine, I can go with the clothes, but then her hair is completely different. Like,
this
wildly
is why, by
different.
The way, this is why another thing I appreciate about the current Supergirl is that they actually say that her glasses are a bit of technology that she was given by, oh my God, they're part of the TV show, by the organization that...
by the DEO?
By the DEO. It's been like a month and my brain has already forgotten things. But yeah,
we've
so
talked
she's
about this show for so long.
I know. But
you've had to type DEO out so many times.
I know. I knew it was an acronym. I just couldn't think of it because you got like, I think I was thinking of Star. I was like, well, it's not Star Labs. So yeah.
Right.
But yeah, in the comic, she's been given glasses by the DEO so that anytime she puts her glasses down, her hair changes. And actually, there's a really cute scene that. Oh wait, you read the Super Family issue, right? That was like a couple weeks ago. Where Clark takes her to dinner with Jonathan Lois.
I guess I haven't.
Oh, it is charming as heck. But she and she and Jonathan have like some cousin bonding, and he asks her like he's super excited to ask her a question about Krypton, but he asks her to do the thing with the glasses, And then she does, and then she winks, and he says how cool she is. It's like the cutest thing. But it was really nice because they actually explain the reason, and they also get around the fact that, like, how does no one realize that Kara is clearly Supergirl by actually letting her appearance be a little bit different.
Right.
But in this, it's like, yeah, her appearance is different. It also makes no sense.
It would be fine if there was, like, no big hurry to get the thing back. You go like, okay, she wants to come figure out what Earth is like. You have something where she's like, she gets stuck here, like Clark did. You know,
yeah,
but that she would go like, oh yeah, and I'm going to go to classes, and I'm going to play field hockey, and I'm going to go to parties, and, you know, like, and worry about being back in my room on time, when it's like, isn't this like your entire world, your family, everyone you know is going to die if you don't get this thing back in like 2 days or something? Which also means that this entire movie takes course over, you know, just one or two, you know, or 2 or 3 days.
You know, it almost would have been better if it turns out that, like, the glowing orb didn't destroy Argo City, but was, like, just super dangerous. So that way, like, the stakes weren't so high that, like, it makes her seem negligent for doing anything else but searching for it. But it also, it's that way it would be more like, well, I don't have a lot of leads, so I might as well, like, learn about Earth culture while I look for this dangerous thing, which would be a lot more reasonable than, like, wee, I'm flying for several hours that I could be doing other things that could actually save my people.
Yeah. Oh, I just remembered this. This is like, and this ties back into the Supergirl TV show. Originally, Christopher Reeve was going to be in this movie. He was going to have a cameo as Superman in this movie. And part of the reason why Supergirl has to save the day is that Selina has already taken out Superman with her magic. And he's like sick and just completely sidelined. And so she has to help him. And, you know, that's part of her day saving, and which I feel fits perfectly in with the Supergirl TV show, where that whole first season, Superman was either off the planet or like that, the season finale.
Boots.
Yeah. Where we just see his boots and he's laying down on a table, but there was like some kind of scheduling conflict where Christopher Reeve ended up not being able to do it.
Yeah.
But that would have been so great.
I'm going to go back just slightly, and I don't want to focus on this too much, but it is something I've seen in at least one other thing with Supergirl's origin, where she comes to Earth and immediately is like almost assaulted by men.
Oh my God, that scene is like, yes, but please.
Talk
at length about that.
Because
talk as much as you want about it. But that scene, there's part of that where, like, watching it this time, when I was just like, the oh my God, where she says,
"Why, like, are you doing that, this?" And they say, "Why it's are you just doing the way this? We are."
Yeah, and I was like, "This
oh
is
my God."
That was like, you know, like getting punched in the stomach or something. Just like her, like, she just comes, like, why on earth, when you're writing this movie, do you have the first people she interacts with be two guys that try to rape her?
Yeah.
Like, to try to, like, assault and attack her, you know, like, it's just, what, this is in your movie that you're trying to get little girls to come see? And it's like, yeah, it's great that then she beats them up, but it's like, how about you have the first people she meet be, like, people who are just like, wow, you must be Superman, you know, you must be related to Superman or something, like,
yeah.
Whole scene out.
Yeah, it was real bad. And I definitely remember one of the animated movie that involved her with and Dark, and then she gets like grabbed by Darkseid.
That's Superman Batman Apocalypse is the animated movie you're talking about.
Yes, which is really weird considering it's clear it's like a Supergirl, or that movie is very strange. I actually don't, there are parts of it I don't mind, but there are definitely parts of it, including that scene, where it's pretty darn bad.
Yeah.
And
it's an improvement on the comics it's based on, but it is still bad.
Yeah. And it probably made worse that, like, she doesn't know English in that one. So, like, men, like,
she has even less agency over what's happening around her. Yeah,
and like, and also in this movie, like, Kara just assuming that, like, the men aren't going to, like, hurt her, like, that they're not there for, like, evil purposes, and then they're clearly, like, the least amount of threatening innuendo, or, like, the least vague innuendo. And it's also, this is kind of a side thing, but the neighbor dad from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is one of the guys, and that
Matt
is...
Matt Frewer.
Yeah, that's really unnerving to see. I'm like, I don't need to see you do this. I don't need to see you leering at a young girl ever.
Yeah, which, because I completely had no recollection that was him in the movie until watching it for this. And, like, I've always liked him. Like, because everything I've seen him in previously, you know, other than this, well, I guess, and he's, never mind. I just remembered he's in the sequel to Lawnmower Man, where he's like a bad guy in that. But
he plays one of the horsemen of the apocalypse in the Supernatural season that has the apocalypse in it. Sure. So I believe he plays Pestilence.
He was the voice of the Pink Panther in the 90s Pink Panther cartoon where the Pink Panther talked.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, like, he's one of those character actors. Again, like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was one of those movies as a kid that I really, really enjoyed. And watching it now, like, his performance is so interesting in it. So, yeah, it's, like, it's such a bummer that he's in this movie where he's playing, like, just
this is clearly,
the grossest character.
Yeah, clearly very, very early role for him. Also, and I have to say, because I couldn't stop noticing it, is that he's wearing that A&W t-shirt. A&W root beer t-shirt, and it's like, then there's tons of A&W product placement in this movie.
Yes, there is.
And it's like their machine gets smashed when the monster throws Supergirl into it, and then the potential rapist is wearing an A&W shirt, and I'm like, I really bet A&W did not think this is how they were going to be portrayed in this movie when they were, you know, when they gave the producers all that money.
Yeah, that feels just a little.
At least everybody's happy at the Popeyes. Everyone's just like getting their food and like, hooray, Popeyes. And everyone remembers the Popeyes chicken because it's so blatant in this movie. That scene where she just flies out and stands on top of it. But then like all the A&W product placement is just like god awful. Like no one approved this. Please do not put a rapist in our logo.
It's so funny you say that though. It's weird because, I'm a fan of Alison Brangler's YouTube series on Baywatch, and Baywatch for like at least one, but I think several seasons had like A&W as their biggest sponsor, and like they would always be drinking that. And there was at one point where David Hasselhoff's like son in the show wins a year's supply of A&W root beer as part of a plot point, and he comes back multiple times.
So, that's fantastic.
So, like, they were shilling out well after the Supergirl movie. They were shilling out well into the 90s.
Good for them. Oh, Matt Frewer was also in Watchmen, speaking of comic connections.
Oh, right! Yeah, he played Moloch.
Yeah,
because he, like, if you need a very gaunt older man now, you go to that actor, because he was definitely super, like, gaunty and, no, you know, he wasn't Pestilence, I forget who he was in this, because he was a little more
famine?
Cocky.
Was
he might have been Famine, yeah. But
Most importantly,
I just remember him being, like, really interesting in that role, even though, like, the show's a mixed bag, but that was a really fun role for him.
People will be mad if we don't mention this, probably, or a very small percentage will be very mad if it doesn't get mentioned. But of course, the thing that Matt Frewer is probably most well known for is the fact that he was Max Headroom.
And oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. And I know that some people are going like, I have no idea what that means. But the people who do know what it means are going to be like...
People who are born after, like, who are born before, like, 95, I think. I think anybody born before 95... Yeah, that was always kind of nightmare fuel for me. So, like,
yeah, that's fair.
I confused him with the McDonald's moon.
The Knight?
Yes, I always had a weird like connection between the two of them because they both were like
sunglasses, like, and they're both
and like
either
weird, yeah,
trying to get you anyway, to buy McDonald's like, or Pepsi.
So getting past the sexual assault part of this of this movie, of this wacky 1980s
or even if that part had happened later in the movie, where it's like so after creepy. She's been established, you know, and then she's, you know, like, oh, this is going to be no problem. She's going to take care of these guys. Like, to have that be the first people she interacts with is like so telling about either, you know, the filmmakers or the writer or something, where it's just like,
yeah,
don't have this be the first thing.
And as you said, it's clearly like, but see, it's okay because she beats them up. Is it just because they wanted to show that she has superpowers? Because they could have had it be like, oh,
we already
someone's
know.
Getting...
Like, she's
too,
Superman's cousin. We know, like,
yeah,
she's been
yeah,
flying.
Yeah, we can put the pieces together. But, I mean, even if you could have had, like, I don't know, a guy getting beaten up and, like, or someone, she stops a theft or something.
Yeah.
And then saying, like, you shouldn't do that. That doesn't belong, you know, anything where it's not, like, a legitimate thing that women have to fear being treated as like, oh, look how innocent she is for thinking that these men were going to be like decent human beings to her for like the first 5 minutes of her being on Earth.
It's like you, that first day that Clark gets to Metropolis. It's not like when he and Lois get pulled into that alley by the mugger. It's not like the mugger takes her purse and then goes, all right, now you guy in the glasses, take your clothes off.
Yeah,
like that would never happen in a Superman movie. So, like, don't have it happen in a Supergirl movie.
Yeah,
that would be a pretty amazing twist in a Superman movie. If it was like a robber was like, also now I'm totally gonna have sex with you.
Oh my god! Listen
to how ludicrous that sounds.
Yeah.
For a superhero movie.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't have to put that in one just because she's a girl. Like it's.
Especially because to paraphrase Community, Kara's very young. We try not to sexualize her.
Yeah.
Who is she? You know, I think I recognize the costume.
All right, we're going to have to stop it right there, and that'll be the end of part one. But don't worry, because there will be a part two and maybe even a part three, depending on how long the next episode runs. But Katie and I talked a very, very long time about Supergirl the movie, longer than the movie even is. We talked about it. And I don't want to speak for Katie, but I certainly had a lot of fun talking to her about it. And I hope you all have a good time listening to us talk about it. All of our social media stuff that you should check out is all of that is in the show notes. Please go follow us on the things, follow the show, leave us reviews on iTunes, all that kind of stuff. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week with more Supergirl Gab.
Looking up information on the guy who plays love interest in this movie, and his career is kind of fascinating so far. So I'm interested in bringing that up eventually because
That was like one of the I went through everybody's I basically right, okay. went through everybody's IMDb's last night, and just this is all things that we should.
Who's this Peter already... O'Toole guy?
Has he been in any of the best movies of all time?
Yeah.